Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hallenbeck. Saint Benedict has been called the founder of Western monasticism, and his tradition remains strong in our contemporary world and in the community of Saint Helena, an order of lay and ordained nuns in the Episcopal tradition. The Order of Saint Helena is based in Augusta, Georgia, and the members of their community come from around the world to share an experience of spiritual living, Benedictine hospitality, prayer, and silence. Today we speak with Sister Ellen Stephen, a poet and religious sister who has been in the business, as she says, for 50 years. Sister Ellen Stephen, who prefers to be called ES for short, welcome to the program and thank you so much for being with us today. You know, I'm honored to be speaking with you because, as you might recall, my husband and I were married in your stone chapel in the former home of the Order of St. Helena.
I remember very well.
And that was an amazing day in a beautiful place. And afterwards, the bells were rung by the chapel. It was like the sound of music. It was beautiful. And so your community is very much a beloved part of our life, even though you have since moved and we have since moved.
Well, it's wonderful to have this chance to have our lives intersect again.
Yes.
In this way, and I'm very privileged to be on this program with you.
Oh. Now, why don't you first tell us a little about your own journey?
I first began to hear my call in a strange way. I was in the West Village in Manhattan, in New York City, and I thought I was going to be the great American poetic dramatist. Actually, I was a rather lost young woman. I was studying acting and playwriting at the HB Studio, Herbert Berghoff and Uta Hagen, down in the West Village. And I had been recovering from a failed marriage of 3 years. It failed not because we didn't love one another, but it just hadn't worked, and I got a divorce and an ecclesiastical annulment. I was sort of deciding I wasn't ready for another love affair and didn't know that I would love anybody like that again. And I wrote a letter to my mentor in London and sort of said jokingly, I suppose, when I had written the great American poetic drama, I would become a nun. And he wrote back and said, well, he didn't know whether that was a reason to postpone trying a vocation to the religious life. And I thought that I had made a joke and went into shock.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that was that. And then I began thinking about it, and the joke sort of turned sour. And that was my first intimation from the Holy Spirit that it might in fact be a call.
That's very interesting, the joke and the offhand comment, and someone actually did see that in you. And it's interesting also where you were, because there are so many young people, I think, who could relate to the circumstances of either being in New York and being artistically inclined with big dreams and a lot of hopes, and also having one's heart broken or a failed relationship. And, you know, when we think of people who have given, you know, their lives to a lifelong profession, I don't know how many know the story like this, and how many people who are spiritually devout through their lifetimes actually started off this way like so many others. It's a great way to connect.
Well, the kind of wonderful thing is that when you give things up, you give things to God or to the universe, they come back very often. And I have, in fact, written poetic drama. In fact, I just published my collected poems, and in it is my third poetic drama about Mary Magdalene and meeting St. Paul. Mm. I mean, it's wonderful how things can, in fact, happen after, you know, decades and decades
yes.
and decades.
Yes, congratulations on the new collection, by the way. Is there a title specifically?
Yes, it's called The Poet's Eye.
The Poet's Eye. Thank you, E.S. Now, you mentioned the word annulment before, and it made me wonder if perhaps you had grown up or had been a member of the Catholic faith before that.
No, as a matter of fact, my ancestry was Jewish. And we had been assimilated into various cultures long before I came along, and we didn't practice anything. We celebrated Christmas and Easter and all the cultural things of the Christian faith, except, of course, we didn't go to church. And, you know, we were culturally assimilated in religiously nothing.
You and I have a few things in common that way. I imagine my father was Jewish and my mother was Catholic, and they just sort of let me decide to grow up to be what I chose when I was an adult.
Well,
so, you know, faith became my life. It's sort of almost a reverse psychology kind of thing.
Well, I did a long journey of search, and in fact, I'm writing that journey at the moment. That's what I'm doing right now.
That's great. Now, so how did you find yourself then drawn to the community of St. Helena, and how long have you been a member of the community?
Well, I've been a member of this community since 1969. Before that, I was, for 5 years, I was a member of an enclosed contemplative order, the Poor Clares of Reparation. They were also Anglican Episcopalian. They were on Long Island. So I guess I've been like 45 years almost next year in this order, and almost 50 years in the business, so to speak, if my arithmetic is right.
In the business, I like that. Gosh, thank you. Now, Let's share a little about the order. When was the Order of St. Helena formed, and do you know who formed it and why, like to serve what purpose?
Yeah, it was formed as the Order of St. Helena in 1945, and it was formed by 9 life professed sisters. That means they had made a formal life commitment. Of the Order of St. Anne, which is also an Episcopalian Anglican order. It was an order founded in England, but there was a house in Arlington Heights in Massachusetts. And they had a branch house. We call it a branch house or a daughter house or a smaller house in Versailles, Kentucky. It's spelled like Versailles, but it's pronounced Versailles, believe it or not. And in Versailles, Kentucky, they had a school, because what the order did was teach children. So they were teaching children in the Margaret Hall School in Versailles, Kentucky. There were 9 sisters. And those sisters decided, for various reasons, the main one of which, to answer your question, why, was that they wanted a more spiritual life. They didn't really want to be primarily a school teaching, children-oriented order. They wanted to be a prayer order, a more Benedictine order, which I will be glad to talk about. But they wanted to be a prayer order. And so they broke off from the Order of St. Anne in 1945 and asked the Order of the Holy Cross, which was a men's Episcopalian order, if they could be under their aegis at the beginning. And we were. The Order of St. Helena got its name, Helena, from St. Helena, who was the mother of the Emperor Constantine, and she found the Holy Cross, which is how we got our name, and because she went on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem and found what she thought was the Holy Cross that Jesus died on. So,
yes, and this is going back. The story of Saint Helena is in the probably the 4th century, I imagine. And I love the description on your website that Helena was at one time the most important woman in the world, yet we know next to nothing about her.
She did this journey to the Holy Land when she was almost 80, is the way the legend goes. And she built all kinds of churches, which are the ruins of which, if you go down, you know, to the depths of the ruins, you can see some ruins in the Holy Sepulchre of the Chapel of St. Helena. The founding sisters of the Order of St. Helena broke away from the Order of St. Anne and put themselves under the patronage of the Order of the Holy Cross. And they had, since they were the Order of the Holy Cross, they had St. Helena as one of their minor patrons. And we took the name of Helena because of the Holy Cross. And we wore their life, and still do, the same cross that they get for their life profession. And we, until 1974 or 5, had their superior as our superior. They helped us get started. Then they helped us become autonomous and break away from them and not have men govern us. In 1975, we second passed our own constitutions so that we are no longer connected to them in any way except history and friendship and sisterly, brotherly affection.
That's beautifully shared. Thank you for that. It reminds me, too, we're talking about many, many orders here right now and traditions in the Christian church. You mentioned the Poor Clares before, of course, had a similar experience. Claire, of course, the first Franciscan woman Francis took in and eventually gave her own house to, an order to. The first house, the church that he rebuilt that we know him so well for, he gave to Claire for her convent. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about St. Benedict today. And I'd like to ask you, Benedictine spirituality is renowned and also rather specific. And I'd like to ask, how is the order, you know, manifest in the Benedictine tradition? Who was Saint Benedict?
Well, Benedict was, everybody can Google him, but I think the important thing about him, he is often called the founder of Western monasticism. In the late 4th, early 5th century, and he was the son of a noble Roman family. So, essentially, since he was the founder of Western monasticism, it means that all of our orders, both Roman Catholic and Anglican, are essentially radically, which means rooted, based in his rule, and his rule is the thing he's famous for. And, of course, his rule was based on rules, anonymous rules, that were behind his rule that he sort of based his rule on. And I think the most important thing about him was that he was a gentle person but very disciplined, and his spirituality was one of balance, moderation, and reasonableness. In fact, that's what he's known for. He wasn't military, like the very first community person, Pacomius, and he was a very much a sort of father figure. He established the basic core of monasticism, which I like to simplify, and this is my thing, as because I'm a poet, I like to say it's celibacy, cenobia, and psaltery, because it's alliterative, or chastity, community, and chant. Those are the basics. And then, of course, Benedict also had a really great emphasis on hospitality, that welcoming into this core of praise and community, welcoming the stranger and the neighbor and anyone who wanted to come and share and touch and take away whatever that had.
I like how you shared that radically means rooted. I think it's taken on a different meaning in our culture to be radical.
Yeah.
But what do you mean when you refer to the balance that he was seeking? What kind of balance was Benedict looking for in terms of the spiritual life?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, of course, I don't know Benedict. He was 4th century and I'm 21st. Balance and moderation mean many things, but I think for Benedict and those people who wrote about him, Bede, the Venerable Bede, wrote about him, a lot of spiritual writers have written about him, I think it meant that he was disciplined but not severe. He has elements of gentleness and understanding of human nature. He was not excessive. He was reasonable. His rule is a reasonable rule. It is, to us, it may seem a little, but it wasn't like the desert, some of the desert people. For instance, the desert people, the mothers and fathers, desert mothers and fathers out in the desert, said all 150 psalms every day. And Benedict, you know, kind of realized human nature.
Yes.
You
go
know,
ahead.
and he his rule was for human beings. He had a little sense of humor. Like, for instance, the Benedictine monastic movement community was essentially a lay movement. And he said, watch out for bishops, essentially, because they'll kind of take over and be hierarchical. And, I mean, he may not have thought that was funny, but I think it's funny.
I think it's very funny, and you know, he wasn't probably the first to say that. I recall learning similar things, again, about Francis of Assisi, and who was not even ordained a priest. A lot of these people who were so inspired and motivated at the time were kind of functioning in a way like outside of the hierarchical church like that, which I guess can stymie the kind of spiritual development they were seeking.
Yeah.
You know, so in terms of hospitality then, and Benedictine hospitality, what kind of activities or projects or programs does the Order of St. Helena offer?
Well, we love to welcome people into our guest house. We're a small order, and we don't have a big conference center. We're building a new convent, which you can read on our website. We always have approximately 10 guest rooms, sometimes a few less, sometimes a few more. And we love to have people come. And we love people to drop in. It's nice if they're coming for a meal if they call us up first. But we can usually cope with people who come. there are a few exceptions. You know, unchaperoned kids are a challenge.
But yes, disorderly wedding guests, yeah.
Yeah. No. But, and then we have programs. We probably won't have them while we're building the new convent, but we have had wonderful programs. If they're bigger programs than we can handle in our little place, we have them at a neighboring church. We have, you know, like we had Rabbi Rami, and that was a great success. And we've had wonderful people come and do programs for us. So sometimes we have outside people, sometimes we have workshops, and we have spiritual direction. People can come and get counseling. Besides welcoming people here, we extend our hospitality by going out to other people's places. So,
you know, it's interesting. I hear people talking about becoming radically spiritual or having a spiritual revolution that we need. But, you know, yes, when it comes down to it, what you're doing is the radical spirituality, the opening of the door and the welcoming of the stranger and the spiritual direction, I think is and always has been the most progressive spirituality that we can offer to the world, one heart at a time.
Well, I don't like the term spiritual direction because actually, you know, and I don't like spiritual guidance either, and I don't like spiritual friendship either.
What would you call it? All,
I call it talking to people.
And okay.
And I do know that there is a very special thing because the person who the people come to talk to, like when I do what is called spiritual direction, I think one has to be qualified to be this kind of person because one has to bracket one's own agenda totally and the time is totally for the other. And there is a certain amount of experience, decades of prayer behind it and decades of prayer experience and some wisdom involved, you know. So it isn't just anybody can sit there and do it. You have to be able to be there for the other person and know the difference between what this thing is that doesn't have a name and psychotherapy, for instance. And one could go on for hours talking. In fact, I've done conferences on what the difference is. But I don't like any of the names for it. But I call it spiritual direction because everybody knows, understands that word.
Thank you. That's funny. Well, we're about halfway through the program right now, and I still have a lot more to talk about with you, but we're just going to take a short break for a program ID. This is Care Hallenbeck, and you're listening to the Godspeed Institute, a program dedicated to spiritually based living and to religious tolerance. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation with Sister Ellen Stephen of the Order of St. Helena in Augusta, Georgia. Stay with us.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You're live with CARE, and we're speaking with Sister Ellen Stephen of the Order of St. Helena in Augusta, Georgia, an Episcopal order in the Benedictine tradition. Now, the Order of St. Helena is a religious order for lay and ordained women in the Episcopal Church. And that's very interesting to me because it's unique, perhaps, as compared, say, to in the Roman Catholic Church. Can you please explain or share about the role of women in the Episcopal Church and the role ordained women may play within the order?
Of course, the role of ordained women within the church is still changing, and there is still some pain involved because there is still not total equality.
Are you saying within the Episcopal Church?
Yes. There are some places that still aren't ordaining women. There are some countries that still are not ordaining women to the episcopate, still haggling about it. And there are some areas that women are feeling challenged, that they feel that men are being preferred, chosen, that they have to struggle or fight or be more like men. But there's still not total equality, I think.
How does it manifest in the order here in Augusta?
In our order, it's kind of wonderful. We have 2, 3, 4. They are all exactly like everybody else, except that one of their jobs is a rota of celebration at the Eucharist. That's one of their jobs, like cooking. Anybody who can and wants to preach is on the preaching rota, and we are encouraged to do it. Some people think they can't, but all the lay people are encouraged to preach if they can and will. And the only thing that the lay people don't do that the ordained people do, or any jobs that are going, including leadership of any kind, is celebrating the Eucharist.
And that's what allows you to be independent, as you were sharing before. From the male order of the Holy Cross that you started off with?
No, we were independent before there were women priests, before women could be ordained. We just got outside men to come in.
But this is
this is
such a different kind of opportunity where, from the inside,
all
your needs are met within the order.
And we have been very proactive. Our sister, Mary Michael, was the first religious sister, the first nun ever in the entire world. And she was the first woman to preach in Westminster Abbey. In fact, the order has led in a number of ways. We were the first order. This is off the subject, but we were the first order to have a leadership council instead of a superior. And on our leadership council are both ordained and lay women, sisters. So in some orders, you know, the men's orders, in the old days you had to be a superior. Now in the Order of the Holy Cross, I mean, that was true in Holy Cross. Now in Holy Cross, you can be a lay person. But we're very blessed in that we respect ordination, and we respect it as a call, just like people respect my call to write, and somebody else's call to be a hospital chaplain, and somebody else's call to, somebody has a call to be a solitary or a vocation within a vocation. We discern with each sister what her call is. And then we help them as a community. We see what their ministry, what their call is within the order, and the balance of the individual ministry and the orders ministry, and how we will, as individuals and as an order, serve the world. And the priesthood, the ordained priesthood, and the priesthood of all believers, how they come together to be the Order of St. Helena, and how we as an order, lay and ordained, can best serve the world.
Mm. Thank you so much for that. That was lovely. Can you tell us about your day? How is it structured? What does your day look like?
Well, my day, I wake up at 4:30 or 5 or something, and what I do is we keep the great silence, by the way, from after Compline or the time we go to sleep or whatever. It's a little hazy, but from the evening, from the time we retire until after Mass, after the Eucharist in the morning, we keep absolute silence. And before Matins is this velvety silence, and it is a time of deep prayer. And I have found that that time is a time of prayer, and it is also for me a time of my call. And I create, I write during that time. It took me a long time to reconcile that. So I write, and I pray for an hour or so. Then I take a shower, drink a cup of coffee, and get to Matins by 7:30. Matins is at 7:30. Mass is at 8. Eucharist is at 8. Then we have breakfast. On Tuesdays, we have house meeting, and we have various other meetings. And then we have work time during that time. And then we have the noon small. We have scrunched up the monastic small, what they call the little hours, tercex, known, etc. And we have something called diurnum, which simply in Latin means every day. And we have that at noon. It's about a 12 to 15 minute. Prayer service of psalms and hymn and a little short reading. And then we have dinner, our main meal. And then we have a rest period if you need it. And some people keep on working and doing stuff. And then we have time to work and do what we do. And then we have vespers at 5 o'clock, evening prayer, whatever you want to call it. And that's another, we call them the offices, the divine office. Vespers, and then supper, and then Compline at 7. And that that ends the day for us. And it is what we call a fourfold office. So it's Matins, Diurnum, Vespers, and Compline. And that divides up the Psalms of David. And we chant the main offices and Compline with the plain chant. And we're very, I think it's a great gift and a grace that we've kept the plain chant, because so many communities haven't. And we worked hard on our breviary. We worked 10 years to renew the language. We have inclusive language, and our Psalter is a wonder. And we have kept the ancient chant and the ancient hymns going back to Ambrose, translated sometimes back from the Latin into modern inclusive language. We worked very hard on this, and now we have put it out as an e-breviary and an e-psalter, and we're really proud of that. So,
well, I wanted to mention, as you were sharing, that some listeners might get the idea that living this way is very cut off or isolated, but your sisters actually are very plugged in. And for example, and they're given to the arts and a lot of creativity. Ellen Francis, of course, keeps up with blogs and has a focus on icons. Faith Anthony and her drawings are online. Miriam Elizabeth has photography. There's a lot
and
going on.
She also does beautiful quilts. And of course, the priests do supply work in various local churches. We have two hospital chaplains who work in hospice and chaplaincy. I do the writing mostly. We put out a newsletter. We do all kinds of, everybody does some kind of craft. And Sister Rosina does this incredible ministry in Ghana. She is teaching indigenous priests in Ghana and Nigeria how to be CPE mentors. Which is just incredible.
Well, now, Sister Rosina is in one of your videos that are online, and I love your videos online, and we're going to post those links, too, when the show is posted to our website. But I wanted to touch on something, which is the diversity of the backgrounds of the sisters in the order. Can you share a little bit about what the kind of richness and diversity that they bring to the community?
Sure. Well, I've mentioned Sister Rosina. She's from Ghana. We have one sister from Japan. You mentioned her, Sister Faith Anthony, who does the drawings and she was a research microbiologist. I don't know her exact title, but she was working in a research scientific program, quite advanced. And we recently had a sister from Canada. We've had sisters from all over this country. We've had people of educational backgrounds, from PhDs to people who have gotten their GEDs when they were in the order. Two of us have had Jewish ancestors. Many of us have come from different faith traditions before we found the Anglican Communion.
You know, for listeners, I'll encourage you to go see the video, because I think the sisters are so authentic and honest, not only about the blessings of their lives, but also about the doubts that they struggle with, and just the real grist of life. So I wanted to ask you then, now, what are the challenges you see in today's world that make the work of the order so essential today?
The challenges in the world, or the challenges to the order?
Well, I'll ask about the challenges of the order as well, but in fact, maybe we should...
Okay,
would you rather go
there? I don't care. The challenges of the world, I don't know much about the challenges of the world that are different now than I've always been different.
Okay.
I think, though, I will say this. The archetype of the monastic, the monk, the nun, stands in the center of society. I get this from a theologian called Raymond Panikkar, he just died recently. He's very modern. He's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant theologian. He says that there are various groups, the church and religious groups, the teaching groups, the industry common commerce groups, and the military government groups. And the monk belongs to none of them, not even the church and religious groups. The monk is the prophet. In the Old Testament, you had the priests and the prophets, the priest, prophet, and king. The priests were the Levites. The prophets were somebody else. The prophets stood outside the somehow they were liminal or outside society, but they weren't really outside. They were sort of central. The outside people were the outlaws, the criminal class, and the very poor, the Anawim, the very poor. But the elder, the shaman, the prophet, the starets in Russia, the elders in the Native American tradition, the visionary, the archetype of the monastic, the Benedict, the desert fathers, those people, when society needs them, when the people need refreshment, when they yearn for peace, when they want enlightenment, they go to the ashram, they go to the monastery, they go to the convent. They look for guidance, they look for peace, they look for hope, they look for wisdom. They don't always find it, because people in the ashram or the convent or the desert are just human, and they're just as fallible. But that's what people look for. Mm. They go to their prophets.
Mm. Thank you so much for that.
I think the people, you know, they may be mistaken, but I think that's what... And let me say one more thing.
Sure.
That when we came to Georgia in the 70s, when this convent was started, we were invited. We have to be invited somewhere by the diocesan bishop. And Bishop, old Bishop Albert Stewart said, I want you to come to my diocese, and I don't care what you do, just come and say your prayers. He wanted a place of prayer. So I think that's what the world asks for.
Now, then, what kind of barriers or challenges exist for the order? What do you need?
Well, the perennial challenge, I think, is what I call the pendulum swing. The pendulum swing is from rigor and asceticism for its own sake. It gets too rigorous, and then it swings over rightly, and it gets too comfortable and too lax. And then somebody like Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross come along and say, we're too comfortable. You know, Benedict gets too moderate and too reasonable. And then some reformer comes along and says, we got to pull up our socks. And I've heard this said in the Order of St. Helena. Come on, sisters, we have to pull up our socks. You know?
Yes. Spirituality still needs to be felt, is I think where Teresa was going there and with John. They had a difficult job, those two. You know, it's funny because I have a new book out as well, and we're sort of talking about similar topics. But I think, I don't know that we need the asceticism to the extreme. And then on the other end, yes, there is spirituality in everything we do all day long in our lives. But it seems to be more around practice, that there still needs to be an awareness and a practice that we're mindful of our spirituality in our lives. And that's sort of more like the middle way to me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I was once asked, what I was talking to a Zen Buddhist, and somebody was standing by said, well, what do the Zen people have that you don't have, and what do you have that the Zen people don't have? And it came to me that what the Zen people have that we don't have as Christians, the Zen people have practice, and what we have is relationship. Like it takes two to tango. And if we could just understand that, you know, somewhere beyond both of those is God, is the supreme being, is everything, is all and nothing.
Thank you so much, Sister Ellen Stephen. As we near the end of our interview, which has gone way too fast, this has been a wonderful conversation. I just want to let listeners know that all your website info for the order and book info and video links and all will be posted shortly on GodspeedInstitute.com. E.S., I just want to thank you for being on the program. It's been a wonderful talk, and I could go for hours more.
Well, me too, Care. It's been just wonderful. Thank you so much.
We spoke of many spiritual traditions on the program today, including monastic traditions, and to help celebrate the feast day of St. Francis, which is coming up next week, the Godspeed Institute is publishing a new book called Inspired Relationships, Seven Saints Real-Life Lessons on How to Live, Love, and Work. I wanted to share something from it with you today because Ellen Stephen shared about this, the real life and the real day of her experience in the convent and how the jobs and the work are pretty much like everyone else's jobs and work. Now, human loves can be glorious images of divine love, wrote C.S. Lewis, but what does the inspired relationship look like? The inspired couple, the inspired marriage, the inspired parents, teachers, friends, employers. The image of that divine love and the path to helping it manifest and sustain in our own lives can elude even the most spiritually receptive or religious souls. The spiritual people in history whom we revere as saints have been raised up for us to model the human being utterly turned over to divine love. However, due to their exalted status, we often find it difficult to see how the deeply human and personal journeys of the saints relate directly to our own, and they do. For example, as a younger person, I looked at images of St. Francis of Assisi and saw the peaceful man, alone with nature, caressing a deer while a bird rested on his shoulder. I felt glad for these artistic renderings of his inner peace. But I did not know the nuts and bolts of how we arrived at it, and that is the story that assists us in ours. It wasn't until I discovered, when I was about 18 years old, that there was an 18-year-old girl whom Francis loved and risked the Franciscan Brotherhood for, that I began to find a way into the flesh-and-blood journey of this world-renowned icon of peace. You see, it was not Francis's distant divinity that taught me. It was his passionate humanity, his love for Claire, his challenges with family members, his joys and evolving talents, his frustrations, his search for the right place in the world, his struggles with coworkers and finances, the many ways in which his life was like mine, and most likely yours. This was a saint I could take hold of. I had found a way in. I began to unearth the larger relationship of Francis and Claire, and later other relationships in church history, often shrouded or controversial, between other men and women whose great capacities for love act as guides for our own relationships today. The very real-life experiences shared by these couples have helped me tremendously in my own life and as an interreligious facilitator and spiritual coach. Simply, each of these saints had a special someone who helped to inspire, guide, and form them. Their relationships often shed light on marriage, work, family, healthy attachments, emotional healing, and more. I've distilled their stories as a helpful guide, pertinent to our relationships today. And I hope that you have the chance to enjoy this new book, just published by the Godspeed Institute, to help you in your relationships every day. It's called Inspired Relationships, Seven Saints, Real Life Lessons on How to Live, Love, and Work. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. The Godspeed Institute is an independent educational organization dedicated to promoting religious tolerance and spiritually based living. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to info@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.